Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, From Silk to Silicon: The Story of Globalization Through 10 Extraordinary Lives, is a work of narrative economic history by Jeffrey E. Garton, a former Yale School of Management dean and policy official. The book explains globalization not as a single modern phenomenon, but as a long sequence of expansions in trade, finance, technology, political power, and institutional design. Garton organizes this history around 10 influential figures, including Genghis Khan, Prince Henry the Navigator, Robert Clive, Mayor Amschel Rothschild, Cyrus Field, John Dee, Rockefeller, Jean Monnet, Margaret Thatcher, Deng Xiaoping, and Andrew Grove. Through these lives, he shows how individuals can accelerate global integration by opening routes, building networks, financing exchange, reshaping states, or commercializing new technologies. The book belongs to the intersection of biography, business history, and international political economy. Its purpose is to make the evolution of the global economy concrete by connecting large structural changes to decisions made by specific leaders operating within their own historical constraints. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, globalization presented as a cumulative historical process rather than a modern invention. A central contribution of From Silk to Silicon is its insistence that globalization did not begin with the internet, container shipping, or late 20th century trade agreements. Garton frames global integration as a layered process in which each era added a new mechanism for moving goods, people, capital, information, or ideas across borders. The title captures this arc. Moving from overland and maritime trade routes associated with the older world of silk to the digital and semiconductor-based economy associated with silicon. This structure prevents globalization from appearing inevitable or purely technological. Instead, the book shows that integration has repeatedly depended on power, organization, risk-taking, and institutional change. By using biography, Garton makes long historical shifts more intelligible without reducing them to simple hero worship. Each life represents a particular turning point: conquest, exploration, colonial commerce, international banking, communication infrastructure, industrial scale, regional integration, market liberalization, national reform, or technological entrepreneurship. The result is a history in which globalization appears both durable and fragile. It advances through innovation and ambition, but it also carries conflict, inequality, and political backlash. This broad time horizon is one reason the book differs from narrower business books focused only on contemporary markets. Secondly, conquest, exploration, and empire as early engines of cross-border exchange. The early figures in the book illustrate that global economic connection often developed through coercive and imperial structures, not only peaceful trade. Genghis Khan is used to show how military conquest could create large zones of movement across Eurasia, reducing barriers across territories while imposing order through extreme violence. Prince Henry the Navigator represents the maritime turn, in which European exploration expanded geographic knowledge, navigation, and access to oceanic trade routes. Robert Clive points to the commercial and political power of empire, especially the way chartered companies and colonial administration could link distant territories to European markets. Garton does not treat these developments as morally neutral progress. Their inclusion underscores that globalization has often combined exchange with domination. Trade routes, ports, and commercial systems were frequently created alongside conquest, slavery, extraction, or political subordination. The reasoning behind this topic is important because it complicates modern debates. Global integration can produce efficiency and contact among societies, but the historical record shows that the rules of integration are rarely equal at the start. By placing these figures near the beginning of the sequence, Garton makes clear that the global economy was shaped by force and state-backed expansion long before it became associated with corporate strategy or digital platforms. Thirdly, finance, communication networks, and industrial scale as foundations of the modern global economy. The middle portion of the book shifts attention from territorial expansion to the systems that made modern global commerce practical. Mayor Amschel Rothschild represents the rise of international finance, showing how trusted networks, family organization, credit, and information flows helped capital move across borders. Cyrus Field represents the communications revolution through the transatlantic cable, a project that dramatically shortened the time needed for information to cross the ocean. John D. Rockefeller illustrates the rise of industrial scale, managerial coordination, and globally relevant corporate power through oil. Together, these examples show that globalization depends on infrastructure that is both physical and institutional. Markets cannot function across distance if information travels slowly, credit is unreliable, or production remains local and fragmented. Garton uses these figures to explain why the 19th and early 20th centuries were decisive in creating a more tightly connected economy. Finance reduced the friction of distance for capital. Telegraphy reduced the friction of distance for information. And industrial organization reduced the friction of scale for production and distribution. This topic is distinct from the earlier imperial theme because it focuses less on acquiring territory and more on building the connective tissue of global capitalism. The book, therefore, links globalization to systems design as much as to exploration or trade policy. Fourthly, political leadership and policy reform as forces that reshape global market rules. Garton gives substantial attention to political figures who altered the rules under which economies connect. Jean Monnet represents institution building after the devastation of European war. His work on European cooperation reflects the idea that markets can be stabilized through supranational arrangements that make conflict less likely and economic coordination more durable. Margaret Thatcher represents a different kind of intervention market liberalization, privatization, and a challenge to state-centered economic management in Britain. Deng Xiaoping represents the transformation of China through pragmatic reform, opening the country to global trade, investment, and production networks while retaining political control under the Communist Party. These examples show that globalization is not just the result of entrepreneurs or technologies. It is also shaped by states deciding which barriers to remove, which industries to protect, which institutions to join, and which forms of capitalism to permit. The contrast among Monnet, Thatcher, and Deng is analytically useful because they did not share a single ideology. Monnet emphasized integration through institutions, Thatcher emphasized market discipline, and Deng emphasized selective opening under authoritarian rule. Garton, therefore, presents policy leadership as contingent and adaptive. Different political systems can promote global integration, but they do so through different bargains, constraints, and social costs. Lastly, Andrew Grove and the shift from industrial globalization to technology-driven integration. Andrew Grove, the Intel leader, helps bring the book into the Silicon Age, where globalization depends heavily on semiconductors, knowledge work, supply chains, and rapid innovation cycles. His life also links personal migration, Cold War geopolitics, corporate management, and technological transformation. Grove was born in Hungary, survived severe historical upheaval, and later became a major figure in the American technology sector. In Garton's framework, Grove represents a different kind of globalizer from conquerors, financiers, or political reformers. He did not integrate the world by conquering territory or negotiating treaties, but by helping build the technological base that made modern computing and digital communication possible. But this topic matters because it shows how the late 20th century global economy shifted from moving mainly commodities and manufactured goods to moving information, designs, capital, and specialized components through complex networks. The semiconductor industry also demonstrates that globalization is not simply borderless. It depends on talent flows, research ecosystems, intellectual property, manufacturing capacity, and geopolitical stability. By ending with Grove, the book suggests that innovation has become one of the primary engines of integration, but also one of its vulnerabilities. A world connected by technology can scale quickly, yet it can also become dependent on concentrated expertise and fragile production chains. In conclusion, From Silk to Silicon is best suited for readers who want a broad, historically grounded understanding of globalization without reading a technical economics textbook. Business professionals can use it to see how markets emerge from infrastructure, policy, finance, and leadership rather than from demand alone. Students of history, international relations, and political economy will benefit from its long chronological range and its attention to the interaction between individuals and institutions. Policymakers may find it useful because the book shows that global integration is never automatic. It requires rules, incentives, trust, and political choices. The book stands out for many works on globalization because it does not focus only on recent trade debates, multinational corporations, or digital disruption. It also avoids treating globalization as an abstract force detached from human agency. By using 10 lives across very different periods, Garton creates a comparative structure that links Mongol conquest, maritime exploration, colonial power, banking networks, telegraphy, oil, European integration, market reform, Chinese opening, and semiconductors. This makes the book especially valuable for readers who want pattern recognition across centuries. Its limitation is that biography can simplify large structural changes, but its strength is accessibility, compared with more specialized academic works. It offers a readable synthesis that makes the global economy feel historically constructed, morally complex, and strategically relevant. If you would like to support Jeffrey E. Garton, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.